Welcome to the 2009 802.11n Wi-Fi Challenge at WebTorials, where we are discussing the best practices you should employ when migrating to 802.11n. I'm Robin Leyland, an analyst in the networking industry and host of the challenge series at WebTorials. Joining me is Joni Wexler. Joni is a writer and analyst and the author of the Network World Wireless in the Enterprise newsletter and a longtime observer of the wireless industry. Joni will be leading discussions. Welcome, Joni.
Hi, Robin.
Joining us to discuss migration best practices, we have Chris Kozup of Cisco Systems. Chris is a senior manager for mobility solutions at Cisco Systems. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
Also participating is Jeff Smith. Jeff is vice president of product management at Proxim Wireless. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Robin and Joni.
I'm now going to turn the session over to Joni, who will ask our first question.
Thanks very much, Robin, and thanks to Jeff and Chris for joining us today to discuss migration best practices to 802.11n systems. I'd kind of like to start at the beginning, if that would be all right. Let's step back and pose the fundamental question. If I'm an organization and I've already got some 802.11a, b, g installed, how do I know when it's time for me to migrate to 11N? How do I cost justify that? How do I know that it's time? How do I do that evaluation? And I'm going to ask Jeff if he would like to start with that response.
Hey, thanks a lot, Joni. I mean, that's an excellent question because as more and more laptops enter the enterprise, IT personnel are running into is that the network is starting to bog down because the existing LAN infrastructure supports throughput of around 20 to 24 megabits per second, and people are used to their 10100 wired LAN throughput of around 100 megabits a second. And now with the new .11n technology, you know, that provides throughput exceeding 100 megabits, so you can actually fully utilize the wired LAN infrastructure when it's connected up to a .11n access point and, you know, fully able the benefits of the mobility you get when more laptops go into the enterprise. So you're not getting bogged down with the limited throughput, and now you're getting the same benefits that you get with your desktop connection now with your laptop connections, with all the additional benefits that come along with that that increase productivity and save money.
But when you say all the benefits that come along with that and increase productivity, and Chris, feel free to jump in here, how does that translate to the bean counters? In other words, if I have to go up to a CFO and say, hey, you know, we've got this wireless LAN already, now I want to make it, quote, even better, and it'll take some finagling and some there'll be some cost associated with it, but here's the hard reality of what it can deliver me if I turn to it. Anybody have a way to help the folks listening today create a justification for a migration to 11N?
Yeah, I guess so. This is Chris. I'd certainly concur with Jeff's statement in terms of just the growth of mobile devices and needing to support that. But in addition to that, I think one of the things that we're seeing is really, and Joni, to your point, this desire to do more with less. And one of the great things about 802.11n is that it significantly enhances the throughput and just the available bandwidth that users can derive or drive applications over. And so in terms of cost justifying to the business, the investment that IT is making in 802.11n, that becomes a lot easier with respect to just the more that I can now do with that infrastructure than was previously the case. And if we look at the key trends in the industry, Jeff talked about increased devices. We're also seeing the desire that users have to run their wired applications now in a wireless environment. We're seeing, of course, the need for increased reliability of connectivity. Think here, many application-specific devices that don't so much require a lot of bandwidth, but just require very consistent and predictable connection to the network. If you combine all of these trends together, ultimately IT needs to respond to that. And the great thing about 802.11n is that you can, in fact, accomplish and meet the challenges that these trends present and do it in a cost-effective manner.
But given that 802.11n access points cost roughly twice what a legacy access point would cost, how do I justify this? What's the story that I can tell to my CFO to say, you know, here's how I can justify this additional upgrade?
Yeah, this is Jeff from Proxima. You know, further to Chris's point, you know, it comes down to, price per megabit. And, you know, that's a benefit that .11n really provides you, is if you do a direct comparison of, you know, the cost of the existing infrastructure to the cost of the capacity you get with .11n, then all of a sudden it actually flips. And the .11n, you know, cost per megabit is actually less expensive than what you're currently paying for a legacy solution.
That's an excellent response. Thank you for that. It's a good way of looking at things. So let's say I agree with what both of you have said, and I've decided 11N is something that I need to at least start introducing into my environment. Maybe I don't have the luxury to overhaul and do everything at once, but I want to start, as I need to add access points or possibly replace older ones, I want to introduce 11N in gradually. It would seem that this would be challenging in terms of my AP layout. So if I have a mix of legacy and 11N devices operating cohesively, even though 11N, of course, is backward compatible with the earlier versions of 802.11, the behavior and performance of the two of the older and newer access points differ. 11N is more efficient. It has greater coverage. How do I plan an AP layout that accounts for the idiosyncrasies of the various flavors of 802.11 and the various devices in the network?
So this is Chris again. I think the first recommendation that we generally give to customers here is really to understand their usage characteristics and understand the applications that they're looking to run over their network. I think oftentimes what we find is that customers in various parts of their facility experience different demands on the network, and it's not necessarily kind of all ubiquitous, all homogenous. So understanding that, you know, there may be areas where you need additional capacity because that's where people tend to congregate, those would definitely be areas where you'd look to bring in that additional capacity through 11N access points probably first. Oftentimes what we find is that frees up additional infrastructure to be located elsewhere, so in the sense of expanding coverage. But I would definitely say the first step is to understand usage characteristics, use 11N to augment capacity where it's required. As far as coexistence is concerned, we don't really see any challenges here per se, in the sense that certainly, at least with the Cisco solution, coexistence is very simple. 11N as well as ABG are simply plug and play into the existing infrastructure. But it does allow the customer really to add capacity where needed.
And this is Jeff Smith from Proxima. I'd just like to add to that. The interesting thing, if we look back at the legacy solution, is that 5 gigahertz, because it's twice the frequency of 2.4, fundamentally got about half the range when comparing .11a to .11g. And with the MIMO technology in .11n, the thing that you get is that you actually get twice the range now with 5 gigahertz as you get with .11a. So the big benefit here is when you upgrade to .11n, you now can achieve the same coverage with 5 gigahertz in .11n mode as you do with your .11g mode. So our recommendation is to now benefit from, all the 5 gigahertz frequencies that are available, which really truly simplify your RF planning, since there's about 10 times more channels available in 5 gig compared to 2.4 today. And, you know, with the coverage model being the same, it's a little bit simpler to be able to remove an existing AP, put in a .11n AP, and get the same coverage for 5 gig. And that also helps you segment your network as well between different types of clients.
Are you saying, Jeff, that I could pull out something running in 2.4 already, a B or G client, probably a G client, put in 11N in the 5 gigahertz band and get similar coverage?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly
okay.
what I'm saying. So now you're benefiting from all the additional frequencies in 5 gig, yet getting the same coverage as you got previously in 2.4.
Yeah, because one of the questions I wanted to ask both of you, and I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, was with the greater coverage with 11N, if I'm easing 11N access points into my environment bit by bit, and I still have some legacy clients around, both of you run multi-cell, you know, alternating RF channel architectures. Is there any issue with interference if suddenly one of the access points goes quite a bit farther than the one before it did, you know, maybe overlapping into another cell and perhaps, you know, interfering there? Chris, did you want to address that?
Yeah, I think a couple of points to address that. First of all, Cisco is definitely seeing really a one-to-one replacement for existing ABG access points moving into N. And the reason for that is really because a lot of the times the reason customers are moving towards 11N is to take advantage of the increased capacity and value that that capacity is going to provide. And so the concept of deploying for performance as opposed to deploying for coverage is key. Clearly, customers go in and stretch the range of their access points out to the farthest reach possible, but they would not really get an environment that was designed to take advantage of or designed to support the breadth of applications that are going to come down the road in the future. So the cost of retrofitting and adding in access points after the fact is far greater than necessarily adding kind of that marginal or maintaining, I guess, the current state of the one-to-one. That's one point. I think the other thing here in terms of just 11N versus ABG, Jeff touched on certainly 5 gigahertz. We see that as critical and as a key value proposition of 11N, really moving and taking advantage of the broader spectrum and frequency. We're looking to deliver tools that allow much more intelligence into the system to guide devices to connect into the 5 gigahertz frequency on a more consistent basis. But I think generally with a dynamic system that is able to do RF planning and able to determine the appropriate power outputs, the appropriate channel assignments, the issue for a customer to actually have to worry about, is there co-channel interference, or does this 11N access point extend further than I had intended in terms of coverage? Does it impact my ABG? A lot of that that intelligence from a Cisco perspective is built into the system that really automates that and actually takes the worry away from the customer to have to deal with that.
Jeff, what about in an Aproxim environment? If I've suddenly got an access point reaching further than it has before, might it interfere with a faraway cell? Would you advise turning power down, going for performance rather than coverage? What would be your response to that?
So similar to Chris's answer is, with the benefits in range, what you can do and what we recommend is to move more people to 5 gigahertz. So if I have, let's say, an entire deployment that's done with 2.4 gigahertz, so what I can do is I can, you know, replace half of the APs and move people up to 5 gigahertz, get the same coverage. But the net benefit that people may not realize with 2.4 is now that I have half the number of APs running 2.4, I'm actually utilizing half of the channels. So it actually simplifies RF planning. And in fact, if I upgraded all the APs, and so, you know, half the APs are doing 2.4, I'm getting twice the range, so I get the exact same coverage as a half before, while the other APs are covering the enterprise with 5 gigahertz, that is another solution that they could take a look at.
Okay, and Chris, a few questions ago, you mentioned the importance of knowing your usage trends, capacity that's being consumed in various parts of the organization, so you know where's the most appropriate place to begin putting in a little bit of 11N here and there to match the capacity requirements.
That's right.
Do both of your companies have tools that allow me to figure that out, to see what the usage levels are in various parts of the company?
Yeah, certainly in Cisco's case, you know, there would that type of data would be easily gathered from the wireless controller itself. So in the scenario you laid out, you're assuming that there is already wireless, obviously, being used in that location. That you're just determining, okay, where in this location is the load the heaviest. So you'd be able to get that information directly from the controller. Obviously, if you're moving into a greenfields environment, there's a little bit more guesswork that's involved in that because you're modeling, you know, how users move throughout a facility. If it's an education environment, clearly you'd want to make some assumptions that, you know, public spaces like cafeterias or libraries are probably going to have heavier load requirements than individual single-person dorm rooms, as a good example. But generally our tools would largely be housed within the system itself.
And Jeff, what about a Proxim system?
And with respect to Proxim, just going back to the coverage model, so just to reiterate that with, you know, twice the coverage, you now require half the frequencies, so your RF planning becomes a lot simpler. So that reduces that challenge that we've had with the previous legacy systems. And we have a management system that, you know, gives us all the statistics on the usage, so we can address that with respect to, you know, more APs or, you know, how we want to cover it with respect to different frequencies, maybe different SSIDs if need be. And at Proxim, we have a separate software solution that's a standalone solution that centralizes and manages all the access points in addition to the rest of the components in our end-to-end solution.
I was wondering if there's so that people could identify when you talk about some of your RF management and capacity monitoring capabilities, is there a brand name for the software tools or the suite of tools that you have to do that? And if so, what would the brand name be for Cisco and for Proxim?
Right. So in the case of Cisco, all of this planning, both from implementation to ongoing monitoring to reporting to troubleshooting, all of it is handled within our WCS solution called, or otherwise known as Wireless Control System, and that's really the one-stop shop for all wireless management all pulled together.
And that's hardware and software?
It's actually a software solution that runs on a server platform.
Okay. Okay. And Jeff, does Proxim have a brand name for its suite of software tools?
Yeah, our management software is called Proxim Vision ES.
Okay, great. Thanks. So I wanted to keep moving ahead here. What do you recommend is a way to keep the slowest client in a mixed environment, I'm talking potentially ABGN, from gating the performance of the entire network? So for those folks who are introducing an 11N access point here and there, still have some of the older ones around and older clients,
mm-hmm.
How do we get the benefits of N without being bogged down by the older slow pokes?
Right.
Chris, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll take a stab at that. So I think the first recommendation that we generally give to customers is if they can decommission 11B, that's always a good idea. And we've seen a lot of customers actually take steps to do that where they just no longer support 11B clients. Now, that may not be possible for all customers, and we certainly acknowledge that. Those customers with more legacy devices and potentially vertical environments may have a challenge to do that. But Cisco introduced a technology called ClientLink, and ClientLink uses beamforming technology to effectively increase fairness in mixed mode environments by actually improving the performance of legacy G and legacy A clients. And the reason I say it improves fairness for everybody is because by improving the performance through beamforming, and what beamforming does is send a targeted direct signal on a per-transmit basis to the legacy client, by improving the throughput to that client, it actually allows that client to complete its transmission that much more rapidly, which means there's more airtime for the 11N clients also to transmit. So what you experience here is a net improvement for legacy clients as well as a net improvement for new 11N clients, as opposed to trying to penalize one in favor of the other.
And to be clear, at this juncture anyway, ClientLink aims to improve the performance of the legacy clients, not 11N clients yet.
That is correct, and that's really where the pain point lies, right?
Mm-hmm.
The concept of coexistence and the crux of your question is to say, you know, do legacy clients, are they going to impact the performance of 11N clients? And let's face it, if we had a perfectly greenfield environment, 11N is going to scream along just fine. But what we want to make sure is when in a mixed mode environment, we're optimizing that performance of our legacy clients, freeing up more headspace or more headroom, if you will, for the new 11N clients.
And Jeff, what's Proxim's recommendation for optimizing the performance of anyone and everyone in a mixed environment where some of the older devices might be have a tendency to bog down everyone else?
Yeah, I'd just like to go back to the enhancements that were made in the .11N standard compared to the .11G standard.
Okay.
You know, .11G had to live with legacy of .11B, so they, you know, effectively could coexist, but certainly not optimally. And we all understand that a G network, you know, really, you know, goes down to its knees when B clients are available. So agree with Chris on the recommendation to, you know, try and get people to, you know, disable their B or just enable their G as a default mode. But in .11N, they added a new high throughput preamble format, which it's an HT signal field, which actually speeds up AGC training in a multi-transmit and multi-receive MIMO system. And in mixed mode environments, .11N frames are transmitted with this preamble, which is compatible with the legacy .11 AG solutions plus the new HT format. And what that means is that new .11N clients can coexist much more effectively with the legacy clients. So this is a benefit now to .11N coexisting with, you know, legacy AG solutions. We still recommend people to benefit with 5 gigahertz due to the new coverage you get and separate your legacy solutions, so in, you know, being in 2.4 and then, you know, your new high-performance network going to 5 gig. That's still a recommendation, but the .11N standard helps to make it more effective in a mixed mode environment as well.
Given what you just said, Jeff, I wonder if Proxim and or Cisco support the strategy for using the 2.4 gigahertz band for legacy clients and the 5 gigahertz band for new 11N clients. In effect, let's say I had a dual mode a dual radio access point, and I had 2.4 gigahertz capabilities in one radio and 5 gig in the other. Could I, in effect, run two wireless networks, the G folks continuing as they always have through the 2.4 gigahertz radio and the newer N folks going through the 5 gigahertz radio? Is that a recommendation you would make, or what are some problems with that if not?
I mean, it's definitely the recommendation that we're making to all of our customers, just because 5 gigahertz didn't get as much momentum with .11A just because of the coverage issues. Now that's solved with .11N, so it really effectively and efficiently allows them to migrate you know, more of their users to a .11N 5 gigahertz solution.
Yeah, and I'd concur with that. I think actually Cisco's view here is that it's really in the best interest of the customer to make the most effective use of the spectrum available. And clearly, the best use of spectrum is going to happen in the 5 gigahertz frequency. But if you do have devices that just simply are single mode, meaning they can only operate in the 2.4, obviously it's still in the customer's best interest to take advantage of that frequency. Cisco supports or is moving in short term here to support a feature called Band Select that actually will guide multi-mode devices to really connect into the most appropriate network, and that generally means the 5 gigahertz frequency. So actually automating that process, once again, to ensure more of a movement towards the 5 gigahertz, which, as Jeff already pointed out earlier, that actually then frees up more capacity in the 2.4. So once again, definitely an optimization capability that's beneficial.
Okay, and both of you have been seemingly very enthusiastic about the 5 gigahertz band. It seems that the 5 gigahertz band is really where the opportunity lies. That said, maybe we should talk a little bit about evaluating vendors for their support of dynamic frequency selection, or DFS-2 in the U.S. and the ETSI DFS standard.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, would you like to explain to us what that means?
Yeah, certainly. So DFS, dynamic frequency selection, refers to the ability of the radio to detect interference from radar systems or other military systems that may occur in the UNI-2 extended bands of the 5 gigahertz frequency. If that interference is detected, the radio must dynamically stop using that portion of the spectrum so that it does not interfere with those military systems. This is a feature that Cisco was first to market, and testament to really our investment in enterprise class radios and silicon, but a feature that we consider paramount to really unlocking the full capacity of the 5 gigahertz frequency. Because if a vendor doesn't support the feature, they're actually not allowed by the FCC to use those frequencies at all, which of course cuts about 50% of the spectrum capacity available then in the 5 gigahertz frequency, and removes that from being able to be used.
Jeff, anything to add on that score?
Yes, yeah, certainly. We actually thought that we were the first with the FCC certification as well. And we when we launched our product, it supported all of the DFS bands in 5.3 and 5.4 for both FCC and ETSI worldwide. So, we support a global solution that supports, it's about 480 megahertz of spectrum that is now, usable globally.
Now, my understanding is that I will have other vendors say to me, well, we can always upgrade to DFS support later. My understanding is that in the United States anyway, if a product has not been DFS certified out of the chute from a hardware standpoint, the FCC does not allow a software upgrade to DFS. So the whole hardware software platform would need to be re-evaluated and recertified. Is that your understanding too? Jeff, do you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's, as part of the certification, there is something referred to as a software-defined radio.
Mm-hmm.
That's very difficult to achieve, and you're correct. If you are certified, for DFS certification, you actually have to use a new FCC ID. So that does require the generation of a new SKU or product set. So you are correct in that.
Okay. Finally, if I'm moving to 802.11n, little by little, I'm dropping in some 11n APs as time goes on, and I have various applications and devices with specific setting requirements that may be at odds with one another. How do I manage the mixed vendor environment? And I'm thinking particularly real-time, voice-oriented applications and devices that might have some quirks. Many of the voice devices, for example, don't operate in the 5 gigahertz band. Some, like the Vocera badges, require really, really low power settings. If I've got a mix of, Vocera and Cisco and Spectralink / Polycom, and other types of wireless voice devices in my mix, how does that, if it does, affect my access point infrastructure plan?
Well, I guess I'll start off and take a stab at that. I think the first thing here is that our general recommendation to customers is to always understand, first of all, the usage characteristics of those devices. So make sure that in a deployment, in a migration process, that they're actually taking measurements and using the actual devices that will be used in a production network. So that's the first piece of, I think, fairly important advice that we generally give. The second part here, though, is really to design for, and I hate to call it the worst case, but it is effectively the worst case from a requirements perspective. So design the network so that it can meet the requirements of the most picky or finicky endpoint or device that is going to be working in that environment. And generally, what we find is as long as that's achieved, as long as they've designed for the worst case, everything else generally works fairly effectively. So it's really just a matter of understanding what that most picky device is and tailoring the network design to it.
Thanks, Chris. Now, Jeff, let's say that I've done what Chris suggests, and then lo and behold, a couple months later, a pickier device comes into the environment that some other business unit thought was a good idea, and I didn't know anything about it. Am I going to have to reconfigure my whole network?
I mean, it all depends upon the devices. If devices are Wi-Fi compliant, then the answer is no. It's for the non-Wi-Fi compliant devices where you do have more exposure, where you have to do what Chris was saying, and it's planning needs to be more careful and definitely needs to be addressed on a case-by-case basis. But at least for existing deployments, I come back to, just continue to promote using 5 gig because if it's working on 2.4, then that's another reason to migrate the new .11n users to the 5 gig frequencies.
And, Joni, I would just add to that. I think one of the things that Cisco offers within our management suite within WCS is the ability for the management application to actually make recommendations based on specific requirements, whether they be from a device perspective, whether they be from an application perspective. We have actually the ability to go in and tell the system, Here is the device name. Here are the requirements of that device. How does my coverage and capacity actually look on a visual floor map depiction to actually support that? And so if there is, at a later date, a specific device or application that comes in that has more stringent requirements, we can feed those into the management system and actually get back a tangible report that says, okay, here is where potentially you would need to look to augment or make some changes.
Did you want to respond to that, Jeff?
Yeah, just to add just a little bit more to what Chris was saying. We found, several years ago that it was actually very critical to have management systems. That was probably the most critical thing to, push enterprise deployments forward. So I think most companies have the management systems now that can control and manage a network. But I just wanted to reiterate, one of the really big benefits of .11n, in addition to the capacity that gives you greater than, the 10-100 wired LAN does today, is the range actually makes RF planning a lot simpler now for these, enterprises that, don't have people that understand RF deployments. The fact that, you can get by with half the number of frequencies really has just made their life a lot easier. So, having the management platform now is great because it manages the entire environment, but the fact that you're getting twice the range really simplifies your job.
Okay, great. So I want to thank you, Chris and Jeff, for joining us today to chat about how we get from point A to point B in a wireless LAN as the new higher capacity technology becomes more mainstream.
Thank you.
Thanks a bunch.
Thanks a lot, Joni. Thanks, Robin.
I want to thank Joni for leading a very good session, and special thanks to Chris and Jeff for their valuable input on the best ways to migrate to 802.11n and the possible how to overcome the problems that could occur. I also like to point out this is just one of five discussions we have on 802.11n, so I encourage you to check out the other sessions. You can also find out more on each vendor's solutions for wireless at the Challenge webpage. And I also want to encourage you to contact any of our sponsors for more information on this or any other 802.11n topic and let them explain how they can help you build a better wireless environment. Thank you.